Good afternoon, girls and boys, ladies and gentlemen, and everybody in between. My he's, she's, they's, everybody. What did I miss?
It's okay. You didn't miss nobody, I don't think, at least.
I didn't offend anybody.
No.
You sure?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just making sure. I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to get in trouble. Welcome to Say Less, where we bring the topics you need to hear about, whether you're a Gen Z or a millennial. And, you know, we talk about them. So you just need to say less. Just tell us what you need us to talk about, and we're going to make sure it gets done. All right, cool. Obviously, I'm not alone. I'm finally amazing. Tandere here.
Yeah, guys. Back after an educational sabbatical, you know, we're back in business.
Not an educational sabbatical.
Guys, come on. Education is very important.
We know what this. Are you getting educated at? What's your education about?
Okay. It's a BBA in sustainable finance and digital innovation.
Sustainable finance and digital innovation. I thought you were studying to be an environmental engineer.
Yeah, but they didn't have it. No, they didn't have it in English in Europe as like a bachelor. So I have to do it as a master.
Oh, so once you're done with this, then you can do it as a master. Yeah. Ah, how many years am I paying?
Just another like 7.
7?
No. Actually, it's 3 years. My bachelor's 3 years. So like it's like 5 or 6.
You're paying for the rest. After 3 years, I'm out. When you turn 21, I'm done with you. Do you know that that's what parents used to say when we were young? Like my dad used to say 18 even, like scamming us. But like 21 was like, okay, we are done. All the best to you and your future endeavors.
I'm aware of you, Mamzo.
What would you do if I did that? What is it? What is it?
I don't know.
What is it?
I'm just laughing.
Yeah, man, what is it?
I'm really just laughing.
What's funny about that?
I don't know what I would do. That's what's funny. I genuinely don't know what I'd do.
Anyway, well, good luck with that.
You know, Lavia. I am some African parent's dream. You didn't even ask me to become an engineer, doctor, anything of the sort. And I still chose that career path.
Because I didn't force you to do anything. I allowed you to choose your path, babe.
Exactly.
What do you think of parents who don't allow that? But some kids don't know where they want to go. Sometimes something has to be chosen for them. People are different.
I don't think I have enough information about that type of...
I love that answer so much.
Like, I don't know. I don't get nothing. That's not my area.
I love that answer so much. When you don't know, it's so powerful to say, I don't know. Because I also don't know. But if you didn't have a plan, I would make sure you come up with one.
Oh.
I might have... Luckily, I didn't have to be that parent, but I might have been that parent.
Oh.
If you were serving lost and not sure... We were going to have to find a way. Isn't that a parent's job, though? Like, as a parent, if you ever were to change your mind and decide to become a parent.
# child free. Hmm?
Yeah, so what type of parent do you think you'd be if your child was serving? I don't know what I want to do.
We've had this
games.
Conversation.
Okay, so...
I don't, like on we've talked about on the show. I don't know. I mean, I won't be in that situation, and I don't want to think about being in that situation.
All right, cool. So last week, some big things happened. By the way, this week, I'm putting out a song. Tando knows the song.
She has a couple, so I actually am not sure which one
it's the
talking.
One. It's the one.
She said it's the one.
It's the one that I always am like, this is the one that's going to go out first.
Okay.
So are you excited for me?
Of course I am.
Do you think it's a good song?
You
can't even say
so.
No.
What do you mean?
Oh,
I can't
really
even say
so?
No.
Oh. Yeah. Oh my God, would you say if it was bad?
You know I would.
In front of everyone. But it would still make people talk and then they'd go listen just to be like, you're right or wrong. That actually would be a great marketing strategy.
Yeah, no, guys, the song sucks. That was purely for advertising. What's it called? Purposes only.
It sounded like you said advertising.
It was what I said. I fixed it.
So this comes out on Thursday. We're shooting the same week. So on Friday, the song comes out. So tomorrow, the song comes out. #Sotwa. That's the name of the song. So let me know what you think. And be mean, actually. I don't care. Be harsh. Be nice. Be amazing.
Remember
be honest.
Remember what Cardi B said.
What did she say?
Oh, she said she loves her haters because even though they hate on her, they be going to listen to her music.
They be making sure the streams are pulling nip. Yeah, powerful. So last week, now back to last week, as you can see, Tano's wearing purple, I'm wearing black, was a very important week. In fact, I was supposed to release my song on the 20th. And then I had to move the date because I was like, okay, that's not going to work. And I'm glad I did that because, one, you know, there was something more important happening. And two, we got to all focus our energies on that, including us. I mean, on the day I was recording visuals for the song, I ended up recording on that day. And you were the incredible hero who came outside to be like, yo, it's 12 o'clock, guys.
Yes,
get it
guys,
together.
Wait, let me tell you the story. Basically, I'm very diligent when it comes to activism. I'm very diligent when it comes to that. So I literally excused myself from class. Like, I wrote my teacher an email. I was like, yo, like, I'm not going to be there for a good, like, 15 to 25 minutes. You're going to have to firm it. And then I set an alarm. I told my classmate to be like, yo, please write down anything that I miss. I'll be right back. I left. I wore my black clothing and I just went to go sit on the ground. My mom looks at me. Are you taking a break? No. What are you doing then?
Just like lying on the floor in the garden. Like, what's going on?
Is that not what we were?
Yeah, but like I didn't have context because I didn't know what time it was because I was busy, you know, shooting.
Moving on.
And then what happened? Ah, tell the whole story. We didn't just look at you.
Oh, no. But that, okay. Well, everyone looked at me like I was, oh, they were like, oh my God, what time is it? I said, it's 12:05.
So we still lay down and, you know, completed the rest of it. And we were very proud to do that. And I was very proud of you for letting us know what's up. I'm proud of you. We need more women like you who are going to say.
Thanks. We have an incredible one right next to me, though.
We do have an incredible one right next to you. So we did bring a credible person. Actually, Tando, I'll let you do this.
No, you're already halfway through.
No, you go.
No, but mom.
No, you go.
No, mom.
No, you go.
No, it's okay.
No, please, you go.
I'm not playing.
No, you go.
I'm not playing. Like, you got this. Like, you got it. You got it, mom.
Okay, so we have a representative from Women for Change. I always say Women of Change. I don't know why I do that. I'm not alone, right?
It happens.
It happens. Bring the mic closer, girl, before this dude comes out of there. By the way, you heard them say I look oily, right?
I did.
You heard Senna say I look oily.
I thought we looked glowy.
So she has not used K-Beauty, clearly.
Because
that's what I used. Mm-hmm. I understand what, girl. You understand? I have the salmon white whites. Like, apparently, it's in that product that I used.
I'd like to say that I use Lalive. Hashtag We love you, Auntie Amanda. You're the queen.
I also get me glowing. I used the oil.
You didn't let me finish.
Oh, sorry, but yeah, you made me look bad, so I was panicking.
No, anyway. I wasn't trying to make you look bad. I was also trying to enter, but I don't use K Beauty. But love my queen, Auntie Amanda. You know, Lalive, we love you. Thanks, you make me glow every day.
You also use K-Beauty. We both use both.
I don't.
Oh, those masks that I gave you, what do you think they are?
I said I'm waiting to use the stuff I already have before I use that stuff.
Okay, well, you should close the masks properly because I saw they were open in your bathroom when I used it yesterday. They're busy drying up.
Who left them open? Because I never touched them.
I gave them to you and I haven't used them.
They've been closed.
Anyway, and then I also gave her that sunscreen that I gave you, the one in the white packaging, that's K-Beauty.
Which
that
sunscreen?
Spray that I gave you in the gold thing?
Yeah, I haven't started using any of it. I told you.
Oh, okay. Well, that's powerful. Anyway, back to Women for Change.
Yeah, boo.
Right? Girl, please introduce yourself to the whole country and to the whole world, hopefully, and let them know what you're about and why and who you are and how last we came about before we delve into all the activities.
Okay, cool. So I am Cameron Kasambala. I am the spokesperson at Women for Change. A little bit about Women for Change. Obviously, we started in 2016. Our founder, Sabrina Walter, she decided she wanted to bring an end to gender violence and femicide, so she made Women for Change. And a lot of the work we do centers around, you know, victim support, so providing life-saving support, whether that's connecting victims with, like, free counseling or free legal support or even just a safe space to talk. We obviously push for advocacy and policy change, like we've been doing recently. And we do a lot about amplifying awareness, so sharing the stories that aren't going viral, particularly like the femicide cases that aren't necessarily getting worldwide attention.
Mm. I literally only heard the last bit of your name, and I feel like everyone's going to feel
Cameron.
The same. Cameron, but babe, your accent, where's it from?
I call it the international student accent.
Is it?
Yes. It is a real thing, guys.
It is a real thing. And I was just like, oh my God, like, what just happened? Okay, cool. So Cam, can I call you that?
Yes.
All right, perfect. You look beautiful, you sound beautiful, and you clearly have a beautiful soul and spirit for if we just look at the work that you guys have done. But when we were speaking off camera earlier, you said you guys are only five people. Yeah. How are you able to do all of this, whether it's policy change or even providing, I'm going to just say mentorship or access for that safe space for other people. As five women, I mean, when we look at how many women in South Africa are being abused or need help every day, as a five-person, you know...
Team.
Well, but I wanted to use a nice word before that. As a five-person genius, amazing, five, you know, extraordinary squad. Superwoman. I'm assuming it's only women, which is not a good assumption to make.
You have one male.
You have one male. That's amazing. How are you managing? And what do you need to expand that team?
Oh, it's been rough. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I know I said it off camera, but this picked up so much momentum. I didn't think we could have even imagined how much attention it would garner. Like when we did our petition handover in April, we had like 150,000 signatures and we thought, wow, we've done the thing. Like this is great work. When we released information about the shutdown and then we were at over 1 million signatures and we were getting international attention and we were like, there's five of us. I don't even know how we begin to manage it. And we were stretched so thin. Like as a spokesperson, interviews were my thing. So every interview, I was doing interviews. I mean, like, between the past week or so, I must have done like 100 interviews. Like it has been insane. And I genuinely don't know how we do it. I think it's just, you know, when you work past your actual capacity to do work, I think that's what we've all been doing, is stretched so thin, particularly like with all the emails that have been coming in, the interviews. We've also had to work events. Like it's been insane. But Sabrina, one thing about her that I am so grateful for, she will always push for us to still prioritize some level of well-being. Yeah. So she'll take on a lot of the work if we can't keep up with things. Our new kind of operations person, Malise, she also handles a lot of trying to alleviate some of the work, but it's exhausting.
Which international school did you go to? And you haven't answered the part of Tatano, please remind me, the question of like, what do you guys need to expand that team so that you can do more and be able to cope? But which school did you go to?
So I have been to five different high schools. Yeah. Not because of anything other than the fact that we moved.
Okay.
But I've lived in Kenya. I was in Durban, Malawi. And so I went to quite a few either British or in, like American schools.
Okay. You went to ISK?
I went to?
ISK.
I went to Crawford while I was in Durban. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they would know schools in Malawi. I don't think anyone knows them.
No, but I mean, what type of international school, like so British or American?
British and American is all I needed. That combination. Really.
How old are you?
I'm 24.
That is insane, babe. That is insane. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
So you guys are both Gen Z. I'm outnumbered today. I'm outnumbered. Okay, cool. So what do you guys think you need? Obviously funding. You know, who's been funding you, if you want to thank them? And what type of funding do you need now in order to upscale the work that you've already done on a regular basis?
Right. Sabrina. Sabrina's the one who's been funding the organization, which I think has been why it's been so tough, because she's one person. It's not like she's like a millionaire or anything. Like she will often sacrifice paying herself for the month to make sure either I get paid or someone else in the team is paid. So she's pulled out of a lot of personal finances, whether it was loans and things like that. And actually we almost shut down the organization because we just weren't getting enough funding. And it became a really big issue. And
did last week change all of that?
I think the past weeks have definitely changed. I think we've now been receiving much more donations. It's been awesome. I think from some beauty brands, we've received like 50,000 rand or 100,000 rand. So it's been major for us to
shout
have
out
that
to those
kind of funding.
Brands. Shout out to you guys.
Yeah, they've been doing things and it's been awesome.
Did I use the wrong finger?
It's what I remember. It's this one for like, who was it? I was watching.
This is Clark It. This
yes.
Is Eat.
Yeah.
No, this is Clark It.
This is Clark It.
And okay, then this one is Eat. It.
Yeah,
right?
So they ate that and okay. We cock you. Okay, cool, yeah?
I'm also learning. I also have to like check TikTok and be like, okay, what am I using the right thing?
Not you at 24,
thing?
Still learning. Ah, but you're doing a lot more important things, yeah?
But yeah, so it's been a really big thing, I think, for us with the financing. And a lot of people see us and they think, okay, we're this multi-million dollar corporation with all these people. And it's like, no, we're five people and our founder is doing the best she can to fund this
team. Is this your
team.
Actual job?
Yeah.
So you don't have another job?
I'm a student, aside from working the job.
Well, what are you studying?
Psychology.
Oh, wait, we had this conversation.
We did. Yeah. I'm studying psychology.
Okay, amazing. Tando, you got any questions, baby?
Just about what you think about the statistics in the country. And obviously, you're not South African. So from an outside point of view, like how... I'm trying to figure out how to properly structure this question. But like, from an outside perspective, how do you think South Africa is dealing with the problem? Like also including the statistics of 1 in 5 women, I'm pretty sure, right? Yeah. And 15 women every day, which means a woman every 2.5 hours. So like yeah, from an outside perspective, how does that make you feel?
So I've lived in South Africa for quite a long time now.
Okay, sorry.
No. And it's just to show, like, for context of the different places I've lived, I think the scary thing about South Africa is there's everything in place that should be making it work. You know, like in a lot of countries like Malawi, where I'm from, you don't have policies or legislation even to begin to acknowledge the level of gender-based violence and femicide. Like, you go to Kenya or you live in, like, it's not as comprehensive. So when I've been living here, like, it's clear that everything should be in place and everything should be working and we shouldn't have this problem. And I guess that's why the numbers that you were mentioning are terrifying, because I think what happens here is you realize that, yes, everything should protect you, except it doesn't work. Nothing is functioning as it should be. So we have, like, the Domestic Violence Act, Protection from Harassment Act, Sexual and Crime Offenses Act, and they are so well done in detail. Like, they have gone into, like, the smallest things, like, from, you know, we overlook stalking and things. It's in those acts, you know? But the implementation is so bad that I think what's happening is that it might as well not be there.
Because there's no consequence for any of the perpetrators.
Well, there should be.
Well, but they're not being enforced.
Right. I think, and correct me, like, statistics, I might be a bit off with this one, but I think the conviction rate in South Africa is 12%. So you can imagine 88% of the time, nothing's happening to them. Mm. So if you were going to commit a crime and you knew that there was, like, an almost 90% chance you wouldn't get caught, you would do it. So I think that's also the frustrating thing, is you see all these great policies and things. And we have the National Strategic Plan that was developed in, like, 2019 to tackle GBV and femicide. And it was supposed to be from 2020 to 2030. In the past, maybe 2 years, we had a 33.8% increase in femicide. Like, our femicide rate is 6 times the global average. We're known as the rape capital of the world, you know, with 117 rape cases reported every day. So you hear these numbers and you're like, it's not making sense. And I think that's why for us, it was such a big deal to push the government and say, you know what? Like, you've been saying, you've got all these papers that you've signed, you've got all these great policies. Can you do something with them now? And that's why the national disaster was such an important thing for us to have them, you know, declare it that.
And do you think you've had, like, a tremendous amount of change? Or, like, from this past weekend, have you seen the change that you were hoping for?
Yeah. No, I think we knew that the shutdown would shake them. Because right now, with us at the G20, all eyes were on South Africa. Like, everyone was looking and saying, you know, we're hosting this big event. We're trying to come across this stable and growing economy. So international eyes were looking at us. And then the shutdown was going to happen because this was the perfect time. Leading up to the shutdown, after several months of silence, especially from the government, we were getting so many, like, calls and emails saying, you know, we need to have a meeting now. We need to discuss this issue. And it was like, you've been ignoring us for multiple months. And the last thing you said to us was, you've got everything in place and everything is fine and we must leave you alone. But now that all eyes across the world are looking and saying, hey, what's happening in your country? Now we're getting a reaction. So now, I don't think we expected it to happen before the shutdown. I think we thought the shutdown would happen before they reacted. But I think it was last week, Thursday, mm-hmm. when the president was like, you know what, we're going to classify this as a national disaster. We were like,
oh. Yeah, and it was a day before, right?
Exactly. And it was at the G20 social summit. And then we had a meeting with the government that same day.
So
after.
Are you trying to tell me they used it to make themselves look good, ultimately, like when politicians pull up at a celebrity's funeral?
Mm-hmm.
So...
It was bad. I felt like because they were backed in a corner and everyone was looking and being like, your country is kind of a mess.
So what are you going to do? Are you not worried you're going to get ignored again once eyes aren't on us?
So I think the great thing about classifying it as a national disaster, there's a certain level of accountability that they're holding themselves to, because they're saying gender-based violence femicide is a crisis, which means they need to react with the urgency that is needed for the crisis. And because they were so publicly admitting it to the whole world, not just to South Africans, there's a lot more pressure on them to react accordingly. So I think it's almost like when you admit that you're going to, like, I'm going to be going to the gym and I'm going to be working out, and you tell your whole family and they're like, didn't you say you were going to go to the gym? Why haven't you been going? It feels kind of like that.
I don't know. I don't want to be pessimistic, you know, and I don't want to put any negative propaganda or mm-hmm. narratives onto this, so that it almost as if now this conversation is to blame for mm-hmm. any sort of, because, you know, it's one thing to say, yes, it's a national disaster, but, like, what have you done? You know?
Right.
So I think, can we say, okay, we're meeting again, me and you, us here in 2 months, are going to meet again here and talk about what has the government actually done since that time? Because, you know, shout out Ramaphosa, President
Cupcake.
Shout out. You know, he's a gentleman. He's a lovely person, especially like in person. I think for me, there's a lot that I kind of am like, in terms of the leadership style I enjoy. I can't say he's a bad leader. Maybe, you know, I can't say that. But I feel like, you know, if a parent ignores you for a long time and like, I'm hungry. And then when visitors are coming, they don't want you to embarrass the visitors by asking for stuff. And then they quickly give you something just to make you keep quiet.
Right.
When the visitors leave, are you going to get food again?
No, that's a good point. And I think that's why we look at the government kind of sideways and we're like, okay, cool. You've given us another high level promise. What can we expect to see? And we're supposed to have a meeting this coming week on the 28th for an update on kind of their action plan. We don't really know if that's exactly the day they're going to do it. But I think that the pessimism is good. Because it means we're keeping our eyes on them and we're keeping the pressure. Because I think people hear these things and think, okay, we were done. We finished the thing. There's a reason we still had to shut down, even though they declared this. There has to be that pressure on them still. Like, we're watching them.
Because I think people would be ready to do this all over again. You know what I mean? Not just because it was the week of, or, you know. So, okay, cool. That's really exciting.
I mean, you guys still have a march planned this week. Well, I don't know if it's you, but there's still a march planned this week. Towards the cause of Women for Change and GBV, and just
is there? You look confused, girl.
Listen, we've seen our name floating around with a lot of different kind of movements that have been kind of popping up, which has been, I think, tough for us, because I think the biggest thing for us was safety. And when things are happening and we have no idea what's happening, we can't control the safety of the people participating. So
I saw your video, yeah.
Yeah, because there was another march last week where they said it was a Women for Change march, and we were all in Cape Town for an event, and we were like, we're not doing a march. And when those things happen, it's like, it's completely out of our control. And if something bad happens to people, if something dangerous happens, and we had no control over it, but they're saying it's us, then it almost falls on us, like we organized that.
And are you allowed to go to the police and report anything like that?
Oh, I think for us, like, there is an option to sue or do like defamation of character or something like that. But I think it's less about the image. I think for us, it was like you're taking focus away from the intention of the shutdown, and you're doing it in a way where we don't know if you're being safe or you're keeping people protected. And the trouble with this kind of work is people have their own agendas as well, which is perfectly fine. I don't think we're all fighting the exact same battle when it comes to GBV. We all want it to end, but maybe in different ways. But for us, it was like, we wanted to declare like a state of emergency and a national disaster. So we need to keep the focus on that. And our intention was to show like social and economic absence, which means silence. So when these marches were happening, we were like, hold on, that's not at all what we're trying to do. We don't want to march. We're not taking to the streets, because our whole thing was, when you're dead, you can't march. Like, there's nothing you can do. So when that popped up last week, we were like, okay, hold on, time out. Please don't do this. Like, it's damaging the message and you're putting people in danger, and we cannot control the situation. Like, in April when we did our handover, we had security present. Because security companies volunteered to be there to protect the people who attended.
That's amazing.
Exactly, because we want this to happen, but not at the expense of other people. And we can see marches can get rough. They can get aggressive, and things can get very ugly very quickly.
And it can be people who've been planted to make it look
bad,
just to taint your name.
You see?
I feel you. I feel you.
I have a question about the green profile pictures.
No, but we have to talk about them.
Before we go there, though, if you don't mind, if you just will allow me, we've been talking about accountability. And before we take another off-ramp, we want to play a video that apparently has been circulating and going viral on social media about, now let me try and get this right. So a pastor, and what is annoying me, and we can also talk about this later, is the names are not out. And this is where I love where Americans hold people accountable, especially Karens. As soon as you see the face.
Karens.
Karen is Karen. Asimo Steitsimo. So it's Karen. When the Karens do their thing, their names are out like as ASAFP, you know? But there's a pastor, a woman who's a pastor. And correct me, guys, in the comments if I'm wrong. But there's a woman who's a pastor. Her child raped, and she was 13 when she was apparently raped. And the mother of the child who committed to the daughter was confronted by the pastor mom, okay? And when she was confronted, she denied that her son did this. She flat out denied. And I think for me, before we even discuss all of that, so now because apparently the perpetrator's mother is very well connected or economically established, very well established. She managed to make sure this case goes nowhere when they filed. So the mom had to now take to the streets to basically get some sort of version of justice if the police is not going to help. And this is why I'm like,
right,
there's a case that's out there right now that's not being dealt with. So let's just take a look at this video as a collective, and then we will come back and discuss it.
Pain in her voice.
My daughter was 13 at the time, and that man was 21 years old. Oh, I am the witness to my daughter's rape. Ooh, I am the mother who holds pain each and every day. I'm gonna go shoprite go mukwas, more complex. I'm gonna mudi mukwaru nababot. She laughed at me when I opened up a protection order because I realized they're holding cells for mukwas. They cannot hold one old male. She becomes an organizer at TBV, plus femicide, when she allowed her own child to come inside and tell me what one I get. Connections within the magistrate court. My 13-year-old daughter was raped by Mwanakameo. So you are not going to tell me about GBV plus femicide when this woman kept on laughing at my wound. She kept on laughing in court to my...
Heck, tick. So the name is De Kagiso. I was going to talk, but we can still talk about how the media just does not. It's, oh, girl gets raped. No, man rapes so and so. You know what I mean? And give right. And make it look like there was a perpetrator, not just a victim who has a perpetratorless victim almost. Like there was a perpetrator. Let's also include that. I saw a beautiful post around that recently. But here's a woman looking for justice, and she says, oh, this person has connections in magistrates, or she tried to get a protection order, that the lady laughed at her in court. This happened. In a situation like that, like, what needs to be done, in your opinion?
Yeah. You know, it's really frustrating to do this work because there's so much out of your power and out of your control. And it's a lot of the time the people who don't have the resources to fight back that try and get justice, and then they're somehow the person who's done it always seems to have more power. I mean, we see it with police stations where your abuser is friends with the police, and therefore that's it. It's done. You have no case. And it's very upsetting. And I wish I had like a, cool, you just do this and then it's sorted. But there's a reason we try and connect people with these free lawyers and people who are more professionals within the space, because they kind of know the ins and outs a lot better. Mm-hmm. They can figure out, okay, fine, this is what happened, but maybe we can still get this justice. Maybe if we take it to this court, you know, they can try and find like wiggle room to try and help you. But power is power. And I, like, when I listen to this, like, it hurts, because not a lot of people have that kind of power. And we see it across the world. When you're fighting someone who has way more power than you, there's really so little you can do. And that's why I think we end up with a lot of, like, social media needing to push the activism. You know, social media needing to be the voice for them, to get the case going, to bring virality so that people are talking about it. Because now the whole world hears this case and they're like, hold on, why is this happening? And why is it happening like that? And that's not okay. And then you see a reaction. And it's why we're so big on posting these kind of stories and things that happen, particularly with the femicide cases, because we want people to see what's happening and to try and push attention to it to help them. But it really is so frustrating. And even if that person didn't have power, the way that the systems are designed are not to help victims or survivors. They're not designed for you.
So we're good at writing down laws and statements of law, basically.
But not implementing.
But implementation is where we struggle. Because if the police and the magistrates are not helping, I mean, it's almost as if maybe does the woman not have proof that it was the son who actually... Because I think if I heard her correctly there, she's saying that it's the same woman who laughs at her when... Because... It's one thing to to be like, my son didn't do it. It's a whole other thing to laugh at the other person right. who's saying that this happened to their child. But she's saying that she gives this child's name, which so the son's name.
We can't say the name. That's what I was showing you.
But she said it in the video. I'm not saying anything. Oh,
he's a
can't.
Minor in a case. It's we're gonna.
No,
get...
she said he was 21. Raped the son. Raped the daughter.
We're gonna get in trouble. That's what Sina was saying. If we say the name,
you guys can anyway can include this. You just what you call beep me. But she says the daughter was 13 and the son was 21. So it's the child that is the one who she named the son, not her child. Does that make sense?
You know, but that speaks to such a big issue we have.
But
with
why
these
are we
things.
Even hiding his name?
So the reason this becomes such a big issue, like that, and that's what something we have to tell people is that Poppy Act to protect privacy is such a barrier when you want to come out against your abuser or someone who's harmed you, because now it's a defamation case. Because you don't have a clear conviction and it's all alleged, once you name them, you are in trouble because there's
that's
no...
That's crazy.
Exactly. And that's why we're so like frustrating, because I know the feeling. You want to out this person because before they hurt anyone else, here is their name. No. You will not get a defamation against you. You will not go to court for that. And it's a whole issue. And that's why we're always like, when you see up to post, we don't name people often. We always say, and we say allegedly. Allegedly, the boyfriend did this and this thing. Because if you don't, then we have another big issue.
And the only thing you're sure of is that it happened to the victim.
Exactly. And we believe the victim always, but we can't put them in danger because we've decided to name it. And that's like one of the most frustrating things also about this work is the system is designed to protect these people. And despite you knowing that this happened, I mean, you were the victim yourself, like you can't say anything. And if someone else says something as well, that can damage their case. So if we out someone, then now all of a sudden when they try to go to court, they're like, no. This person has a defamation against you because you told them the story and it's not been public knowledge. And now we're not happy to do this case. Like, it becomes such a blow up. And it's so frustrating because it's like, we need to say these people's names.
But we can't.
Well, she said the name. It's in the video. And shout out to you, girl. But... Can I ask a question? No. Yeah?
If it's you as a parent, and I'm going to play the devil's advocate here, and you can tell me. If you as a parent and your son has raped, who do you support? Do you support your child and actually say... Because as a parent, all of you are still going to be blamed for it.
If you're absolutely sure that your son raped or not.
Obviously, it's still alleged, because in this case, your son didn't come to you. You had this woman that said, your child raped my child. So in this case, if you are the parent of the son, how are you supposed to react to that? How do you deal with your child being a rapist?
Why are you all looking at me? I don't have a son.
But you're a parent.
She's giving you the analogy, not
because you're
us.
The parent, you know? We...
I was a parent at your age already.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Hard pass.
Yeah.
This child-free generation is funny.
Please. Have you dealt with perpetrators? How do we expect her to react?
Like parent, you as a parent.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. First, I think there's shame involved, which right. now she's experiencing. So this shame, as a parent, I've experienced that, and it's
like, damn, I'm getting shots. I'm catching strings.
I don't even know what you did, but
I'm
clearly,
no. But shame can come in many ways, guys. I'm right. not ashamed. I'm not saying I was ever ashamed of her or even her behavior. What I'm saying is there are situations we've been in that have made me feel ashamed. Me running short maybe on school fees. That's something that a parent can be ashamed of. You know right. what I mean? So shame is a constant part of being a parent, right. you know? And that level of shame, though, that your child, you know, stressed out or abused another child, you know, that's a man, though. He was 21 years old. That's a grown man. Okay, well, no, I don't know about a grown man, but that's someone who's not a teenager anymore. You know, it's not a kid anymore. So I would say... have a conversation with that kid and or person and find out like what they have to say and say, but you know, we have to have this thing dealt with. It depends, you know, at that point, are you a woman who stands with other women or are you a parent? Now you have to make a choice. And how do you do both at the same time, if that's even possible? So do you teach your child to be accountable? Do you find out if your child understands what the concept of consent is? Do you get your child to understand, you know, what the ramifications of that type of actions are? Like, it's there's so many levels to it. I really, really don't know. There's a video we're going to show later of a mother who's being very proactive about teaching her sons about consent. She's also a comedian, so she does it in a very, very cool way. We'll show the video later, though. But what are your thoughts?
Oh, so I can't be a parent, you see. And honestly, if I was a parent, I completely understand why I would struggle to believe it. Like, if you raised your child and you think, I've raised them with all the good qualities, I've taught them consent, I've taught them to behave a certain way, and then you find this out, I can imagine this shocks your whole world.
Also, if, for example, your son watched you be abused, you already see yourself as a victim. You're the one studying psychology, by the way, actually. So, I mean, how many years in are you that you're making me struggle with this question by myself the whole time?
I was going to help.
Yeah, but she could be a psychologist of a parent anytime and have to advise a parent.
I was on standby when you were ready for my help. I was going to come in.
Oh, you're going to come in?
I was.
Okay, I'll finish here. So one, she could have been, because, you know, children learn abuse from somewhere. And usually it's in the household, from what I've learned to understand. Mm. So maybe the mother still sees herself as a victim of GBV and refuses to have her son be accountable for what maybe the father perpetrated towards the mother, perhaps, you know, because I know, for example, that I know a few people or of situations where the son experienced abuse through the father or experienced the mother being abused by the father and did not learn any other form of healthy ways to correct their own behavior or someone else's behavior. So abuse became the only tool they ever learned to correct any behavior. Right. So, you know what I mean? Like, then there's that. So psychologically, this is a very, very interesting situation to assess.
No, it's so multi-layered, and I feel like you're highlighting good points in that there's normalization with family structures, with friends, and we speak a lot about rape culture and how it's like ingrained in the media and the songs they listen to, and it feeds into this big narrative that this is perfectly fine. One of the big things also we asked when we were doing the petition under Roe was comprehensive sexual education, and the reason was because of this. Children spend a lot of time at school. That's where they spend most of their time when they're growing up. That is a place where they can learn about things like consent and boundaries. And when you begin to teach them to unlearn certain traits that are happening within their homes or in their families. But it is a lot of the time people who have witnessed abuse do tend to become abusive. But I feel like there's so many elements that go into it. We speak about like patriarchy and viewing women as second class citizens or as objects, you know, and that justifying any kind of harm that you do to them. Because if you see something as an object, it doesn't matter if you kick it or if you hurt it, it's an object to you. And I think that the scary thing is with children and parents, you don't always know who your child is. And that's something that I've noticed with some of the cases is the person that they're describing as their child is not who they are on the ground. And we, even with adults, you know, they'll say, oh, he could have never done that. He's such a good man. Why would he ever?
Your son is the leader.
You see?
Your son is the leader.
And it's something you don't see. And so if you can't see it as a parent, you've never experienced your child like that.
It's always the strict parents also who find out in the wildest ways who their kids really be in the streets. Yeah.
Did you guys see that the video of, I don't know if it was like an Australian or there was a white man who went into the gussie and then,
I did.
It was so bad. And he was interviewing like these four men and they all happened to be rapists.
Yes, I did.
And then they were talking about how that, like, the cool guys like that they used to want to be and doing, what was it called? I forgot what it was called.
The
circle thingy?
In the groups.
Yeah, they had a name for it. I don't remember what it was. Hold on. Give me 2 minutes.
Okay, well, while you look for it, I feel like, you know, whenever I see, you know, I experienced, I don't want to say GBV because, you know, but I obviously there's very few women who haven't experienced it, right?
Yeah.
But I think what I'm trying to say is, like with the Thabo Bester situation, I don't know if you watched a documentary. I haven't watched a documentary.
I haven't watched it either.
I haven't watched it, but I'm in it because I had been speaking about Thabo, like, over the years, like, saying, guys, this happened to me, be careful. Mm-hmm. And I always got laughed at every single time by society before it was cool to talk about what you'd been through, and you'd either get laughed at or dismissed. I spoke about that twice in a very public way. And I felt like sometimes when I look at that situation, and this is why I'm refusing to watch the documentary, because the documentary isn't about my situation specifically with him. Right. It's about the entire, whatever they could cram into however many hours that the documentary is. So my story in there is very incomplete. And from the feedback I've been getting from people who've talked to me about it, a lot of people are just talking shit in the streets and podcasts and whatever about me. And, you know, I saw some of it and it was a little bit hurtful, but when I look at how the police handle things and how I was handled in the situation where I got accused of being part of something that I wasn't, it was so hurtful to see that the people who were supposed to be protecting me were believing a murderer, were believing and being used by someone who was already in jail. You know what I mean? Because
right.
I also just, I don't understand how we have the type of policing that we have where they can be manipulated by someone from prison bars. Like, are you stupid? Are you slow? Are you not serious? Or are you really getting paid nothing? You know, what is actually going on here? They would try and bring his letters to my house. Apparently he was writing me letters. I refused the letters. And they were trying to hand deliver them to me. Not like, come and fetch your letters. Yes, girl. Yes. Yes, that was.
Is it bad that I'm low-key? Oh, it's mine. Is it bad that I'm low-key curious to see what
was it your
written?
Phone or was it the camera?
No, that was the camera.
Oh, okay.
Is it bad that I'm low-key curious to like know what he wrote? Is it bad? Because I don't know the situation. You know, I didn't know about this until like.
You know,
a
when
year
they
ago?
Say like curiosity killed the cat.
Yes.
Yeah, I would have been that cat now. So that was the situation that I was in. And I look at how, how do we then go and run to the same police? Like, let's say I go through something. How do you run to the same police and say, hey, please help me. My husband is what? My boyfriend is what? My uncle is what? Like, because it's usually even people who are close to you that do these type of things. So what support do you guys give for people who are actually afraid to either speak or press charges?
That made me so angry when you said that, because like a big thing we talk about is secondary victimization, where you re-traumatize the victim of the scenario by putting them through more stress around the trauma. So like bombarding you with the letters, that is re-traumatizing because it's constantly reminding you of what has happened. And that is so exhausting. And that's why people don't want to go to the police or go through the court system, because it's humiliating. Some of the, how vulgar can I be? One of the people who kind of went in about a sexual assault case told us some of the questions that they got asked. And they got asked things like, how big was it? What color was it? What position were you in? How long did it last? Like, the most degrading.
The
judges and lawyers. The lawyer of the defendant, because they put you on the witness stand and they ask you things like that. And if you can't answer that, then it didn't happen. Because why don't you remember the details of it? And it's such a degrading and humiliating experience.
You think checking what color someone's private parts are while they violate me?
Because if you don't know the details, it did not happen.
If you are that lawyer and you're watching this, or you know a lawyer who behaves that way, please send them this. You are going straight to hell. You will not pass begin and you will not collect 200 even rupees.
It's so disgusting. And so when you say, I didn't want to go, because this is how they treat you.
They literally try to make me go to the police station. Like, and I kept saying, there's no point of me coming there. I don't remember when he had a knife on me, where we went. I don't remember because there was a knife to my face. Yeah. I kept on telling them on the phone, but they wanted me on site. They accosted me on a red carpet for an event. It was my first event. You must have been like, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years old. I don't remember how old you were. And took me to the police station. I refused to sit at the back because I was like, I ain't do nothing wrong.
Right.
Like, you are not putting me at the back. I'm sitting at the front with you. I'm crazy also.
No, but well within your rights. You're not a criminal.
And I just found that I can't find it. That stuff used to be all over the internet. Did you know that I can't even find one picture? I bumped into a magazine this weekend that had that information. When I got to the police station, there was one, I want to say paparazzi, but what a word. There were photographers there. The photographers were early to the red carpet. So people had tipped each other off about something because photographers were never that early. And how did they know which police station I was being taken to?
Oh my God.
They took me straight to that police station. The photographers were already there before I even arrived, waiting for me and taking pictures. I had to ask the police to ask them to stop taking pictures. I asked in English and then he turned around in Zulu and said, "Ayike guys, sorry ni nimzwile." That was the police. It was the middle of winter. They put me in this cold, 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 cold room. There was maybe 5 policemen in there, all watching me cry and scream as I chatted, like in the cold, like physically unable to keep my body still because I'm traumatized, I'm cold, I'm answering questions. I do not know where this place is. I could never be able to show you where this place is. I do not know. I do not know. And he kept saying, "She knows, ask her to take you there." Can you imagine? Like,
I can't even.
They dropped me off by my car. It was maybe 1 o'clock. They took me around 7 o'clock. My car was all alone in the middle of town. They dropped me off and left me there to drive myself home afterwards when I was done. They didn't even escort me home, like to make sure that I'm safe. How can I trust the same police with information about my life?
I want to ask also.
I'm so sorry.
Let her.
Like,
sorry.
If she has a response.
No, it was an add-on.
You don't have a, she doesn't even have a response.
I'm thinking,
sorry, I just went on a rant. My bad.
No. It was an add-on to what my mom was saying. It was also a thing of like, so a lot of people actually like admit it, like those men in the video, and how are they not like being like, I guess, taken on site? Like, why are the police, why is the police system in this country so prone to believing the perpetrators and taking their side?
So this is where I'll come in with on kind of your experience, which is making me so angry, and I am so sorry, because that stuff stays with you. That is such a traumatic experience in and of itself, outside of what happened. And it's so unfair that you had to go through that, because it's bad enough you had to experience what you experienced. You didn't need that from everyone. And I think that's also the public figure thing of when you're a public figure, people feel entitled to you in a different way than a normal person, like day-to-day person, because you're on TV or you're in the media, and they think, therefore, I have every right to know every detail of your life, and you don't get to be an individual person with your own private stuff. And I feel like that's something, like, I hear a lot with women who are coming out about these cases where suddenly they are free for all for everyone to come at from all angles. Mm. And it's so messed up. But when you talk about the police, I had an incident with the police earlier this year with a friend. We went out for the night, and when we were coming back in an Uber, get pulled over by the police, and there's three of them. One goes to the driver's side, one is staying near the car in the back, and one is at our door, and he's saying, get out of the car. And he's like beating on us. He's like, get out of the car. I'm like, why would we get out of the car? We're not doing anything. Takes his gun and he like hits on them, and he's like, get out of the car. So we're like, okay, fine. We get out the car. We stand there. He's like, you can go talk to that one down there and I'll talk to her. I was like, no, we'll talk to you together. That's fine. We can listen. And he's like, ugh, are you lesbians or something?
Oh, my God.
What do you want from us? Wow, you guys are so beautiful. Do you know that? You're so pretty. Wow, you guys are so attractive. I must have like blacked out for like a good 10 minutes because it was a 15-minute interaction. And didn't ask for money, didn't ask for drugs, nothing. Kept asking us, you know, can't you give me your numbers? You know, where are you guys going? And I just remember, like, excuses. I was like, my dad's waiting for me. That Uber says that I should be 5 minutes from home. I'm 50 minutes late. Like, he's going to wonder where I am. And I'm throwing everything I can think of at this man. Eventually, he's just like, well, can we at least get your number? And I said, no. And then we get in the Uber. And the Uber goes, I don't want to scare you guys, but the policeman here kept telling me to leave you guys and that they'll take you home. And I was, something about it didn't sit right with me. So I kept telling him, no, I have to take these girls home. It's my trip. But he kept saying, it's fine. We'll take them home. And I was like,
did you see badges? Do you think it was really
yes,
police?
Badges, police car, full uniform. And then what happened that now afterwards was when I went and I was explaining what happened, they were like, reported to the ward counselor. I was like, okay. And she's like, what badge number did they have? What were their names? What was the license plate on the car? Like, I don't remember any of that. I didn't even think to ask that. All I thought was, please get me out of this situation
somehow. That happens to me. I'm going live on Instagram immediately.
It was insane. And like, and these are the police. So you're thinking, that's why. You're also perpetrators. That's why you don't do anything. Because they're also the perpetrators. They're also the ones going home and abusing their wives and their children. And so it's not surprising that they're also the ones who don't have an ounce of empathy in them. Mm. So it was the most scary situation because I kept thinking, what if that Uber driver wasn't the man he was and he was like, ah, okay, you can take them
home.
The
Uber driver also knew that something was funny in that water. If he doesn't deliver those people also, like, if you go missing, people, you know what
it's
I mean?
Gonna
if,
be,
if you shared the trip.
That's what the, that's, I had an Uber driver tell me about that the other day. Like, he was taken to.
Not you talking to Uber drivers.
No, he just started talking to me.
Okay.
What's it called? He started talking about how, no, it wasn't an Uber driver. It was a story on TikTok about an Uber driver.
Right.
My bad.
Nope, I'm with
basically,
you.
Basically, okay. Anyways.
No, you gotta, as a mom, you gotta be like, okay.
Stop no, I always, wasn't my child safe. I get in and I put on my AirPods immediately. Anyways, moving on.
Watch your surroundings though. Okay, sorry.
Okay.
I'll give you the whole breakdown on exactly how to be safe in the Uber.
No, I got it. Trust. But basically, this woman was talking, explaining a story that the Uber driver had told her that he had picked up this woman and she was barely even conscious and like she just started bleeding and stuff like that, and to the point where he was like, okay, I'm gonna take you to the hospital, even because like if anything happens they're gonna say it was me,
right?
And I don't remember where he had picked her up from, but the woman just kept emphasizing like, be careful of if she's going there, because apparently she went there and she got paid to be tortured by all of these men. It was just like, what? No joke. No,
not
joke.
Us calling you here to recount scary stories.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Moving on. Wait. Oh, but the thing was called Jack Rowling, by the way.
Oh, okay. With the
gang.
Yeah,
that is a thing. Yeah, that was a wild situation. Okay, let's get back to it. Why did you guys choose purple as a color?
I think that's such a fair question because people ask. So yeah. Purple, as in for Women for Change, is a color Sabrina chose. And she likes the color. It felt right. But some of the things she said is, you know, power, femininity, royalty, like purple indicates a lot of those kind of things. But for the particular purple profile pictures, it came from April when we displayed our unburied casket. And on the casket, we had 5,578 purple beads for the number of women that had been killed in 2023 to 2024. Because of those purple beads, we asked people to change their profile pictures to purple in solidarity of that movement.
Okay.
With this, you know, shutdown, we were carrying the same message, which was to have gender-based violence femicide declared a national disaster. So it made sense to keep the purple profile pictures because it was the same movement. Mm. So that's why
and
we kept the purple.
And it's a bead.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, so that's why we kept the purple going.
Okay, cool. Tando?
Can we please go back to the problem of the green ones? Like, I guess...
Oh, goodness.
Like, them trying to, I guess, take... kind of attention
was
off
it like
of the
white
main...
lives matter
yeah. No it was like all lives matter.
Sorry yes
no but bad. same yeah. Because again it's that thing of like when a person in power or who's the group with the privilege feels like their privilege is being taken away, then they need to center themselves back in the conversation.
So we're some men
justice for men
their...
No, boys, not they're not men. These boys, there were boys on TikTok who were making their profile pictures green because of men's mental health, whatever.
Green for go,
men's
let's
lives
hurt
matter
these people.
And justice for men.
Oh, yeah.
They kept saying that men are killed even more than women in South Africa, and we're not talking about men, and men have the highest suicide rates, and we're not talking about men. And I don't know if
good
people,
for you.
But genuinely, I don't know if
like,
people don't
okay, not good
have,
for you. Sorry for you is what I meant to say. But
yes,
like,
but how many months are there in the year? There's 12 months in the year. Up until like January, February, March, April, all the way until now, October, November. Where were these conversations happening? If it's such a crisis, why are you waiting for the conversation to now be about women and, you know, the queer community and their challenges for you to now be like, oh, by the way, we also have challenges. You could have done this ages ago. You could have had these conversations many, many times ago. But men don't seem to want to have these conversations for themselves.
It's like when you talk to a narcissist and they say, yeah, but also me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's giving narcissism.
Exactly.
Okay.
And in doing that, they also want to, maybe this is also narcissistic behavior, make it seem like the other person's movement isn't as bad as it is. So then they're like, it's not even that bad for women.
Yeah.
You guys are making it sound worse than it is. And I remember, I don't know if you saw that voice note that was going around of this guy who basically said, you know, you women are fighting so hard for GBV. It's no wonder we're beating you up. You deserve
yeah,
to
that.
Be killed.
I saw it.
And it was going around. And I was like, something's very wrong in here.
Which brings me to my next thing. Again, if we relate it to, because I also want to clear the air to some extent, you know, just on my own platform, to say in that state that I was in, specifically with the Thabo thing, is... I was a very devout Christian at the time. I'm still Christian, but there's some, you know, I've adjusted a few things so that my relationship with God is my relationship with God type thing. But I looked at, I was very much, because my father also abused my mom, you know. Mm. I love my father to this day. May his soul rest in perfect peace. He wasn't a perfect man. And again, he witnessed abuse. So that's why I also am very good at like, you know what I mean? At like creating excuses so that I could love my father, you know. And there was a time where I completely hated him, though, because I'd seen what he had done to my mom. Anyway, moving on is I always felt, because I saw how damaged my father was, I always felt like actually the key to solving this problem, because GBV is a symptom of, you know what I mean? It's
the
fruit of a tree that has very, very deep roots. Until we are able to, one, uproot this tree or get rid of the disease within this tree, how exactly is it that we're going to solve the problem? Because telling the tree to stop bearing the fruit, is it really going to solve the problem? Or uprooting the tree or fixing the tree? And the tree being the... You know, obviously some men in their childhood were victimized to abuse, and then they became, for them to feel empowered, they then decide, okay, I'm also going to hurt other people to feel strong, right? Because that's what my father or uncle or whomever did to me or whatever figure did to me. And others get, I don't know, maybe by Tanya, I don't know. So what is the bigger plan? Like, I wish I had the answer. But do you guys have a bigger plan in terms of, I've always, especially back then, I always felt like helping and healing men or being a part of a system that does that would ultimately help take these numbers down. I don't know if like pointing fingers the whole time and saying, yo, you guys are abusing us, you need to stop, you need to stop. It's like saying to a child, hey, don't put your hands on the fire or don't do this. I don't know if, and guys, please don't come for me for these analogies. I'm doing my best here.
This is an honest conversation that needs to happen because I think men can feel very excluded from this. And I think it's important that you're bringing it up because there is intergenerational trauma that is consistently passed out. And like you said, a history. Honestly, the apartheid system is still rampant within. When you come from a history of violence where you're infantilized, you're treated like a child, you associate power and masculinity with violence.
Abuse, yeah.
And it keeps tracking down into your family units. And then this, like you said, it's the grandfather to the father, to the son, to the next one. And it stays within. It is psychological trauma. And I think there is a need to also address that. I think you have to come from both angles. I think the reason we lean so heavy on the government is because they set the tone for the country. When your government says we don't care about the issue, why would the people on the ground care about the issue?
I feel like if Paul Kagame came to South Africa and said, if we did a president swap, Paul Kagame would switch things up.
But it is that. And that's why people, sometimes they talk about dictatorships, but it is that you set the tone for what the rest of the country thinks of the issue. So when your government is like, it's fine, we're already dealing with it, and the people on the ground are like, well, the government says we're dealing with it, so I guess it is what it is. No one's reacting. But it, like you said, it has to come from both ends. So we needed the government to admit it and set the tone so that when we come in from a grassroots level and we're now talking about culture and socialization and norms, they can come at both ends to attack it. So I don't think we can ever have this conversation and exclude men, because also men listen to men.
Maybe you should bring a man next week and be like, okay, what's your story?
I think, and let us not forget that there is trauma that comes with living in an abusive home, whether you weren't being abused or witnessing it, that can be passed on. And that's why it's important to not, we're not excluding men from these conversations. However, there needs to be recognition for the internal work they must do themselves. Because I think what happens is then they put it on women to heal and fix them. Like, it's our job now to make them better. And I feel like that's where the issues now come is. It's not my job to come in and tell you that, hey, let me do all the healing work for you. I can tell you that this is an issue and this is something you need to work on, but then you've got to do it yourself. You've got to take accountability. Once you know, you can't unknow. You know, that's kind of, I think, where we're like, is stop putting it on women and members of the queer community to do the work for you. You also have to take initiative and want to change. And there are men who do. And there are men, especially within our community, that have done that work, have recognized their own bias and their bad habits.
Sorry.
And they're like,
Senna's trying to cut our chat and I'm bored. Don't even bother. Don't even bother. Don't even bother.
But like looking at that and being like, you also need to sit back and be like, hey, what do I need to do as well within myself and within the people I interact with to begin this change and this work?
I feel like we need to criminalize it more too, because I feel like it's really, as much as it isn't normalized, it really is normalized in a lot of different type of communities.
I feel like women even staying with abusive husbands is normalizing abuse for their children.
I was talking more towards like just like,
I'm just adding, sorry. Yeah.
Like sexual assault in general. Like the amount, the amount of like rich boys and women, actually. Like I know we're talking about women for change, but I've also seen women commit like madness. But anyways, I've seen really rich boys do terrible things and their parents cover everything up for them.
Right.
It's a crazy thing to watch. And like they'll still have friends. They'll still have friends. I'm just like,
But this is the spectrum we talk about, because men think they're either perpetrators or they're not. And if they're not, they're good guys, which is not how it works. It's like a whole spectrum of things. You can be a repeat offender, then once off. Then you're the friends that are cool with it and laugh about it. Then you're friends that don't talk about it. You're the friends that kind of separate from that person, but you don't call it out. And then you have this tiny group of men that are like, actually, we're going to call it out and we're going to say something because that's wrong. Those men are the men that we speak of when we say these are the good guys.
I think even isolating, let's say you don't want to speak because you don't want to get involved, because men are very much, I don't want to get involved sometimes. But still speaking to the person and being nice to them is not going to help the situation.
Exactly.
Unless you call them out. So exactly. Continue to be friends with the person if you have called them out. If you cannot call them out, then you know, you're just as bad when you do nothing.
Exactly. Thing is, you can't say anything half the time because it's a very like tight legal battle going on. Because obviously their parents have the resources to fight that.
Yeah, but isolate them. Isolation is one of the most painful things you can do to a human. Mm. Humans are not meant to be isolated. But when you isolate an abuser, the same way that they isolate their victims, because even when a man abuses a woman, they isolate them first so that there's no one who they can really tell, or no one is really looking out for them, so that you only solely depend on them. Like, and I know what that feels like, you know?
Right.
And it's such a difficult world to be in, where someone has isolated you and you feel kind of crazy because the only person you get to bounce things off is the same narcissist who's abusing you. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's a very, and then when you find your freedom and you find your power and they still try their nonsense, and that's a thing for women that is going to set us free, is to find your power and stand in that power. And for me, I really believe in God. Like, when I look at how I survived all the different things that I have experienced, is just through literally the power of God. Like, I have nothing else to attest it to. But anyway, back to the topic. So let's talk about now more solutions, because I think we've shared a lot of what is the problem and some of the work that you are doing. And what is the perfect number? Let's, maybe someone is watching here who can help. What is the perfect number for you guys to get per year in order to do, like, to at least finish your next goal of, in terms of the type of work you guys are trying to do?
When you say the number.
The number in terms of rands.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough. I just wanted to answer just something you
sorry,
mentioned.
Oh, sorry, yes.
With the rich boys. Something I noticed is that they're cool with it because they would do it as well.
Fair.
And something I noticed, because one of my friends was speaking about her ex-boyfriend, and she overheard a conversation with the friends, and he was like, no, man, she was fighting so hard against me, like, it was so much effort. And then the boyfriend was like, oh, yeah, but at least she got it anyways.
Word?
Where's that video? We need to educate these men. Where's that video at?
But, like, so, and I think that's why they don't isolate, is because they're okay with it themselves, and if they could have, they would have. And that's why, because if I found out my friend was doing that, I would isolate as well. I'd be like, no, I don't want to speak to you. You're a terrible person, and I hope you get help. Like, I wouldn't even flinch about it. But when you're okay with it and you yourself might be able to do it, then you don't isolate.
So what about love, healing? You see, this is why, like, even bringing religion into this is difficult, because religion is like, respect your husband, respect this, respect that.
Subservient.
Don't ever
obedience.
Leave. Through,
exactly.
Through better or worse, through what, through it's what. Then women stay, though. They get abused. Then the son is like, oh, this is how it rolls. Okay.
Right.
And then, you know what I mean? And then it gets passed on and on. So we also need to allow the Bible to evolve and allow other systems to evolve, so that the system needs to protect women in order for the world to change, you know? But anyway, and the thing about the rich kids who getting away with stuff, you parents are part of the problem.
Very much.
Anyway, so we have a video of this comedian, I forgot her name right now, that I would like to show. Please see her name, follow her, and go see more of her videos, because she does a lot of these type of things where she teaches her son basic life lessons through humor, but also through practical examples. So here is the video.
So as the parent of a 14-year-old boy, sometimes you've got to have conversations that you don't really want to have. Well, he doesn't anyway. But it's important, you know, conversations like the birds and the bees, for example, or how to behave when you're out in public so you don't embarrass your mum, you know, that sort of thing. Well, today we're going to be talking about consent, okay? And I'm going to use my take on the famous tea analogy to get my point across in a light-hearted but informative way. So as always, if you like this video and you think it'll help your teen, send it to them and spare yourself the uncomfortable silences, okay? You're welcome. Riley.
Mum, it's Sunday. Even God took a day off.
Right, well, I can't take a day off. I'm your parent. We don't get days off. Now, listen, today we're going to be talking about something very serious, okay? We're going to be talking about consent, right?
Right.
Do you want a cup of tea before we get started?
No, thanks.
Sure?
Mm-hmm.
Just a smallest drop of tea?
I don't want anything.
You don't want anything? Okay. I make a really good cup of tea. It'll be the best you've ever had.
I'm sure you do, but I don't want one.
You don't want a cup of tea, okay. But I've already boiled the kettle. If I don't make the tea, the kettle might explode.
I'm
but
I don't care. I don't want one.
You don't want one. Well, everyone else is drinking tea. I mean, are you sure you'll feel a bit stupid if you're not drinking tea?
I don't care. I don't want one.
You don't want one. Okay. You don't have to do anything, you know. I'll make the tea. You can lie there. I'll just pour it down your throat.
How weird is that? I don't want one.
You don't want a cup of tea. Well, just, you know, because we're having this chat, most people drink tea when they chat. It's sort of like, I assumed, you know.
How many times do I have to say, just get me the tea?
Right, I'll get you the tea. Hang on. Hey, there's your tea.
Thanks.
You want to drink it then or
what? No, I told you 5 different times. I didn't want
it. Right, okay. So I've gone to the trouble of making the tea and now it's here. You don't want it.
Why are you being so weird about tea?
Am I making you uncomfortable?
Yes.
And that is consent, my boy, right? If she says no, she doesn't want to do it. And if you constantly try and convince her, even when she eventually says yes because she's so sick of you moaning, she still doesn't want to do it. And that is non-consensual. Do you understand?
Yes.
Excellent. Lesson learned. Just so we're clear, you know that tea is a euphemism for...
sex.
Yeah, it's for sex. And actually, if you're not going to have that cup of tea, I will, because I'm absolutely gasping.
I think it's fantastic. If I become a boy mom, I want to be like that. That's what I want to be like.
Girls need to be taught that too, and I need to emphasize that. Like, I'm sure we're putting a lot of pressure because most of the time perpetrators are men. But we also need to put like a little bit of pressure on women and help and like educate a lot of them.
Mm.
Because
No, you're so right. I mean, we see young boys being victims of sexual assault and rape, and it does predominantly come from men, unfortunately. But there are women who have access to them because they're seen as maternal and caring, or it's super cool because she was 21 and you were like 14, and like that's a cool thing to do. And there is
women are also doing some wild things.
This girl, that wasn't cool,
exactly.
Bro.
So
it's like even women who hit men, because that also happens. But we don't want to highlight that right now, because yes, it does happen. But women who speak very, very badly towards men, trigger them, know which buttons to push. Women who, you know, assault other men, and a man cannot go. It's one thing to be humiliated as a woman to say, okay, cool, this was done to me, whether it was, you know, especially with physical violence. And then to go to the police as a man to be like, this woman is hitting me. Now they're also going to laugh at you.
I'm talking straight more in the like face. Sexual assault. Like it was, I have a friend and we fight about this to this day where I thought he should have said something about it and he still hasn't. But this girl who went to my school, she went to a party and my friend happened to have been there.
Right.
And he got really inebriated and, it was his friend's house and he was sleeping over. So he went to go sleep in the guest room and then she saw him walk in there and followed him in there and like basically like try to make out with him while he was unconscious. And I was just like, I wasn't there. I got told about it on Monday, but problem is he didn't remember it. So she went around telling everyone and their mothers, oh, me and this person made out, me and this person got together. And then he's like, I don't know what she's talking about. Like, I don't remember like a thing. And I'm just like, oh, because people like saw her go in there and were like, okay, like we know what happened. And no one really said anything to her, except for me. But no one really said anything to her. And it really bothered me. Like, I was just like, had the roles been reversed, oh my, this would be the biggest problem in the world. Mm. But no, because it was a guy and because he's not going to say much about it, right. Oh no, it's okay. Like, it's okay because she didn't rape him. And but like, he doesn't remember. Do we not see a problem with that?
So in situations like similar to Tando where, but now whether it's sexual assault or, you know,
it was like
battery.
It was like harassment.
No,
though.
That's called sexual assault.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. But I'm talking like in a holistic way where a woman is also like an aggressor of some sort or started it or whatever it is. What steps should a man take in that situation then? Because there are situations where I've seen a woman speak very badly, where I'm just like, oh, damn, she was going to get it from me even. I can't imagine, you know what I mean, what that man must be feeling. We expect men to really be able to shove their feelings down because we're allowed to speak, because should he lay a hand on you, now, next thing, you know what I mean, you're an abuser, but, you know, she maybe was pushing you around or right. using really, really insensitive language. You know, where is the line? Do you know, sorry, if you, I'm talking to you as if you're a policeman or a lawyer.
And I
want to
add something on there quickly, like a false accusations. Like what happens with false accusations as well?
Mm.
I think it's taught behavior that men have to not speak up. Unfortunately, patriarchy is designed for that exact reason. When the system tells you that this is what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do, then you're going to align with that. So men get told, you're not allowed to be super emotional. You're not allowed to be a victim of abuse or violence. You have to be the strong person and you have to be the leader. And that's narratives that have been taught and trained to them. And everyone has kind of gone along with that as being normal. Like, yes, that's what we all expect of you because that's what you have been saying that you guys are supposed to do. So you should do that. When I think it speaks to the importance of why when we speak about GBV and we speak about patriarchy, it dismantling it doesn't just help women. It helps everyone. Because when we start to acknowledge men can be victims and men can be hurt by these things, that is important. Like, that is something that needs to be spoken about. And I really think that, especially with younger boys, like, it's a conversation that needs to be had. And they have to also create spaces for men to do this. Because, like you said, you go to the police station, they laugh you off. Where are the safe spaces for them to come out and talk about these things? And I will say, because you mentioned something about, you know, he wished he'd said something. I'm a firm believer in you don't get to decide when someone needs to come out about what happened to them. Someone might never want to come out, and that is well within their rights. And I think we want them to because we want to, like, justice for them and we want this for them, but it's really not our decision to make when they come out, because that also puts them in a position where, like, if they don't want to talk about it, they don't have to talk about it, you know? And it's not something that I think we can decide for them, but it's definitely...
Again, it's consent.
Exactly. Exactly. The consent to own your lived experience. No, but I hear what you're saying about...
We're not saying you didn't give him consent.
I wasn't saying, like, to speak out about it in that way. It was more of a thing of... that girl was quite popular at school,
right?
And she was just trying to, like, deteriorate his reputation. And I was just like...
She made out with him.
It was a little more complicated than that.
Right.
But it was a thing of, like, she was just, like, kind of deteriorating it. And he could have saved it just by being like, yo, this is actually what happened. And no one really held her accountable for that. And I'm not quite fond of her. So that's... I was also like...
Girl.
Come on.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's also tough because in these situations, like, it is complicated. And... I think the rumor mill is rampant everywhere in high school and workspaces. Like, it's a constant thing. And I think, unfortunately, like you said, if the roles were reversed, really, these people don't believe victims, man or woman. They don't take it seriously. They don't care to react efficiently. And it's just a horrible experience. Whether you're victim blamed as a woman or you're mocked as a man, it's not a fun experience. And you mentioned the false rape allegations. I think that those are very dangerous conversations that we end up having. Because it's only about 3% of accusations that are false accusations. And something that I saw was actually you're more likely to be sexually assaulted by a man than you are to be falsely accused.
There's both sexes.
Yeah.
Like men and women.
Exactly.
Men are more likely raped by another man than to be falsely accused by a woman.
Exactly. And I feel like that's so important because they really should be worrying about that issue of the fact that they're likely to be sexually assaulted. But because we can, and I think this is the thing about, like, false accusations, people can hide behind them. Because if you say, yeah, women love to make false accusations, so when someone accuses you, you can say, no, but it's a false accusation. Because now we've made that a really popular thing to say, that women make false accusations. And something and I think you mentioned a bit earlier, is half the time people don't remember the victims' names. People don't remember the victims. They don't remember what happens. Like this,
the perpetrator's name never gets mentioned unless it's a famous person.
Exactly. And so life just goes on for them as it was. And the systems are designed to protect them. So even if it was true or if it was false, the process to still get it to be something is unlikely. Like if you wanted to go through the process of making a false accusation and then drag yourself through the police and the court system to do that when there was nothing of it, I don't, you know, like,
do you think if this is a national disaster, you can get the government to maybe enforce, especially in high schools, the idea of teaching about, like, having actual classes in school?
Oh, I have like stuff to say on this because we were taught a lot about that in school.
Right.
Yet still the girls were...
It's that one. Well, there's two. But yeah, we mise them because
they're weird.
I don't want to say too much because I don't want people to know who I'm talking about.
They already know, the ones who already know.
Yeah, if you know, you know.
Anyways, we got taught about a lot, actually. Like, it's a constant conversation.
Right.
Of being taught consent, abuse in the relationships, how to deal with it, how to identify it, and different types of consent, like whether it's sexual or conversational or anything of that sort. And I feel like it's really important because, I don't know, I knew a lot of the stuff because this is my mother, but a lot of other people didn't know a lot of, like, things about consent and, like, identifying different type of relationships, because obviously, like, it's not common knowledge. Right. I didn't know that, obviously, but it's not common knowledge, and I feel like it should be.
Well, because you guys both went to international schools. I went to a government school 20 years ago, so there's also that. But I don't think that those type of things, I mean, we're still struggling to get computers into our mainstream schools, right? If that ever even happens. So my question is that something that you would put forward, that, you know, we need to teach sexual violence sensitivity, or rather the lack thereof sensitivity, to children, or rather to teenagers in school, so that no one really has an excuse, same way they're supposed to be teaching tax laws?
Comprehensive sexual education, like, and it's in the National Strategic Plan, and that's why we were so
big. Sexual education could mean just reproductive, though.
No, but comprehensive sexual education is more holistic. It's looking at things from consent to boundaries to sexual orientation. It's supposed to be very well detailed about it from all different levels, and they do it at different ages as well, because it starts with the little ones. I know it seems so odd, because people are like, no, but they're little ones, why are you teaching them about sex? It's not about sex for the little ones. It's about teaching them about boundaries, about they don't need to hug people if they don't want to hug people, they can't touch people if they don't want to touch people, you know, teaching them about their little body bubbles, and if something happens, who do they speak to, you know. It's things like that start from a little age. And I will, you know, the stories I have to share, like, I was volunteering at a school, and we had this grade one boy who tried to kiss another grade one girl, and she was like, no, and she pushed him away. And this grade one boy said, you know, rape and kill you.
Oh,
don't lie.
I'm so serious.
There's no way a 7-year-old said that.
When I tell you that, 6-year-old. Like, because where are they learning it? At home. So when they come to school, this is what they're thinking and
someone
knowing.
At home is saying, I'm rape you and kill you. If a 7-year-old, did you guys investigate that?
So the school, really underprivileged area. Like, it's a really poor school. And I think that's the thing that also happens, is these abusers can hide in under-resourced areas because there's no way for anything to happen. Like, the parents aren't at home, they're working, or they're absent. It's a child-led household. Like, there's so many, I think, nuances within South Africa as well, context-wise, that can limit the ability to even educate children on things, which is why I was so, like, schools are so important in these conversations, because schools have access to children so much more than sometimes parents even do.
Is it fair to say gender-based violence is also an economic problem, an economic-related problem?
Yeah, unemployment plays a big factor in it. And also substance abuse. Those two kind of tend to go together.
Yeah.
And that definitely worsens gender-based violence, because there's additional stressors that bring out even more aggression. Mm. But it's odd, because even like in a relationship, like when you become pregnant, the rates of GBV increase as well. You know, they say the worst moments of GBV come when you're trying to leave the relationship. Like, there's a lot of also just...
That's true.
Yeah, there's so many layers to gender-based violence and femicide, and maybe that's why it's so complex. But that's why the National Strategic Plan was so well done, because it looked at law enforcement, it looked at education, it looked at the psychology, it looked at the medical spaces. Like, it was done so well and so holistically. And so you asked about the government, like, what are they supposed to do? Is to efficiently implement that National Strategic Plan. Because if they do that, and they do it properly with audits and reports, because we need to see exactly what they're doing and where this money is going, but if they do things like that, that is the things that we begin to see more active change. Mm. Because something as simple as teaching kids about, you know, like sexual violence and safety and relationships and abuse, and as little as they seem, they notice things and they take in this stuff, and they need to know from a young age, no, it's not okay that this is happening. But it's also tough to balance, because something we notice with the school is you teach kids about consent and things, and then they go home and they're raped by their uncle. And then what are they supposed to do? Because mom's not home and dad's not home, and there's no one who can help them. And I think that's also the tough stuff, is we have to remember, like, the South African context is rough. Like, it's not all glamorous and we're all going to nice schools where they teach us and then we go home and home is nice. Like, home is ugly for some people. And that's, I think, why we speak to places where we have to create safe spaces for these people to come forward, especially for children. There has to be safe spaces that can protect them and take care of them, because our child protection services aren't always the best thing to look out for them. So
I've even heard stories of, like, a child that was raped and they were brought to the police station a while back. Mm. Heard the story years ago. And the child was told to sit in the same state, like, not wash, not take off the clothes, nothing, until there was a nurse available at the police station to assess them. So it's like stories like that that really break my heart, where you have to sit in your crime, because you're a crime scene.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And while you're that crime scene, you need to stay the crime scene until the crime scene can be checked if you want to ever see the day where you get any sort of justice. Right. And that is unbelievable. Thank you so much for everything you've shared. I think, is there anything you would like to talk about that maybe we've overlooked or we have a blind spot, something important that you want to mention about? I wanted to say earlier, just because it says woman for change, it doesn't mean the change is only for women. Mm. Do you understand? Mm. Just making to a point earlier that a change for women is also going to bring about a change for the LGBTQ community. It's also going to bring about change for the men's community, because once we're able to solve one problem, we're able to move on to the next. Right. Women for change is not only fighting for women, unless you want to correct me.
No, our battles with gender-based violence and femicide, in whichever way it shows up, and it shows up for women in the queer community mostly, but that kind of work impacts everyone.
Okay.
And everyone can benefit from it coming to an end.
And to my earlier ask, is there anything that you would like to bring
resources
up?
Resources you'd like to let people know about?
Oh, resources and RANs. I think resource-wise, for a lot of people, if they are reaching out and they do want support, reaching out to organizations for Women for Change is always an option. We make it our effort to try and find support wherever we can. So someone calls and they say, I'm in the middle of nowhere, like, what can I do? We're going to try and find support, connect you with the nearest hospital or something like that.
But what support do you need?
I think every nonprofit organization says funding, but I don't think people realize the extent of which funding is needed. Something that is really sad is Sabrina.
If you're allowed to say, sorry, I don't want to put you under pressure. You're allowed to say.
Oh, okay. When you said allowed to, I was like, allowed to say what?
No, I'm saying as long as I'm not putting you under pressure to say something that you need to, you know, calculate. Mm-mm. Okay.
No, not even. Sabrina always says she significantly underpays us because that's all we can afford to pay for an individual. I mean, the kind of work that we do, if you were in another space with more financing, like, you could probably get paid a significant amount more. But the reality is, funding goes into funding the people who work for the organization and making us have livable salaries so that we can function. Like, for me, like, my parents are so important because they help bridge a gap. Because if I only relied on the money I make from this job, I would not be able to, like, afford rent and groceries and things like that. It wouldn't be practical. Okay. So it goes into just helping fund the living ability for people who work in the organization. And it helps us do the work everyone asks us to do. You know, people say, can you come to schools? Can you teach these lessons? Can you do this stuff? To be able to fly or drive to a middle of nowhere place to offer these free services requires financing for us to be able to do that. So I think it's financing for us to function as individuals, but for us to make our reach bigger and to do better work and to be more accessible to everyone, we have to have the funding to be able to do that as well.
And have you partnered with other organizations?
We're very careful about partnerships because you might have noticed there's a lot of scandals that arise with different organizations, particularly in this space. We've seen organizations that are supposed to tackle GBV have men within the organization that themselves are perpetrators and abusers. And then it comes out and we're like, okay, we don't want that. So a lot of what we do is a bit more like distance. Like, we want to connect them, but we have to do our own research on the organizations. We have to be in contact with, like, the founders and things. Like, it's a lot of, like, we need to know exactly what's going on within those spaces before we connect with them, mm-hmm. which is why, like, we appreciate the donations and funding in that way instead, because we're not necessarily advocating for people to use your organization, but you are supporting R1 to be able to function. And in doing that, you're helping with this movement. So we've been very careful about who we're connecting with, because at the end of the day, our priorities is the survivors and the victims and their loved ones. And if we're partnering with people who might themselves be harming these people, we're just not okay with that. So that's also, I think, why the funding has been a bit like, because we are very blatantly like, we do not associate with those kind of things.
Okay.
And then what about, like, resources or tips for people that find themselves in a different type of situations, like in an Uber, running or walking, like, specifically women, because we're in a country where, like, they're, like, most of those crimes tend to happen when you're doing just everyday stuff.
Living life. So I think, like I said, you can come to organizations like ours should you want help, because we do have ability to connect you. I think something that I have is the NAMOLA app. And the NAMOLA
what app?
NAMOLA, like NAMOLA. Oh. And it is a free application. And what it does is think of it like an SOS button. And if you have a situation where, okay, you're in a dangerous environment, you're in a hijacking, you're being like, you get this app, you press SOS, it tracks your location to where you are, and they will try and call you to get you to, yes. And they will try and call you. I don't know if they can see it from your phone.
I don't know.
But if you...
Can you see on the monitor? I don't know.
But if you get it, what they do is that when you send that SOS, they know your location and they send emergency services to help you. And it's great because you can say, depending on what crime it is, exactly what crime do you need help with? So are you in a hijacking? Is it a sexual assault? Is it this? And they will get you support as soon as possible. And
don't forget you have the CAP app as well.
Yeah, no.
The?
CAP. It's a security app.
The security company, oh, okay. CAP. Like, you can get, like, right. whatever way they can...
Come and help you.
Do
and
the same thing, but like right. camera, ta-ta-ta-ta.
Okay, so yeah. The nice thing about Namola as well is it'll come with any kind of services. So whether it's the police, you need ambulance, like that's their whole thing. And it's freely available. And it's been so helpful because if there was a situation, like I was at a concert once and I was like, listen, the area I'm walking, I do not feel safe. Can you call me every 5 to 10 minutes? So they called me every 5 or so minutes. And if I didn't answer, they were like, okay, cool, we need to get help for her. So something as small as you can just say, please keep an eye on me while I walk. And someone will be
so
keeping an eye on you.
It's free, but who's free? So someone is funding it then?
I think they're also one of those nonprofit organizations that also get the funding. I don't know exactly who funds them.
Because they're getting the airtime.
Yeah, I think that they do have funders. I know that they also had an issue potentially of having to close down again. This is why funding these organizations is so important, because they provide such available sources. But people can pay for the services as well. There is a
paid
version.
Or the government could get involved because they are struggling to do things on their own.
I always say, if you can't do it yourself, pay us to do it properly, then please.
I feel like, and also a very important thing to give is like not only resources like that, but like so tips like don't run with your headphones, and if you're running alone, fear woman. Know your route. Make sure it's a well lit route. Don't be running at night, and then make
sure
someone
needs to know that you're there. Where are you going? Is someone attention?
Yeah, and then.
Even like the Uber thing I was telling you about, like I know, like I have to sit behind the driver always because you can't reach and grab me if I'm behind you. I have to pretend to like see if the child lock is like on. So I'll say, oh, my jacket's caught in something to see if that child
I
lock
do
is
that.
On. Yeah, because you have to, because you're like, if the child lock is on this car, then like I need to be able to go. Sometimes you
I've
just
seen
go.
Too many horror stories on
it's
my
bad.
TikTok. Like I'm on feminism TikTok, so you be seeing horror
and
stories.
And I've been sitting behind the driver just because I know it's the safest part of the
it
car, just because the driver will instinctively not purposefully protect themselves. So right. That's actually why I always sit behind the
okay.
driver. I didn't know I was killing two birds with one stone.
You are, because if you imagine trying to reach over and grab someone who's right behind you is very difficult, and that gives you time to react. I also recently got myself a taser.
Oh my God, can you get me
spray.
One for
and
Christmas?
And if you go to, I can try. But like somewhere, like where did I get it? Like Blades and Triggers, I think. They sell alarm buttons. Like those little like pull out the end that makes the wee. That's super ear-piercingly loud. They sell them. So like you unfortunately you learn to figure out where can I find these things to keep myself safe. So having that kind of alarm button, people will be like, what the heck is that sound? Why is this going off? And then they pay attention. Because we all have heard that like screaming for help, people tend to be like, let's just stay away from that. We don't really want to get
I'm also
involved.
Constantly on calls when I'm on Ubers. I'm like, oh, so hey,
please.
Yeah, what's going on?
Even if it's not a real call, I'll just be like, how
no,
are
I'm
you doing?
I'm always on calls. Like I will be on call with my friend before and I'll be like, okay, I'm getting in. You're staying with me. Okay, let's go. We talk the entire time. Like
right.
I sometimes feel embarrassed because we're talking about like stuff in front of the Uber driver. Then I'm actually like, I'm never seeing you again in my life. Okay. And then I just keep talking, whatever. And
just
then
know the call's being recorded.
Pardon?
The call's being recorded. Just know that.
What are you talking about?
If you ever had to go to the court of law, like the whole world will hear that phone call.
Where's this call being recorded?
Do you know
the Uber records
features
calls now?
They've added
no,
a feature.
No, I'm talking about I'm calling my friends while I'm in the Uber.
Yeah, and
so
I'm saying
Uber has a feature now where they record what's happening.
Oh yeah,
in the
car.
Car.
Oh yeah, the no, there was a camera in the front when I went in the last time.
It's good. It's good for everyone to be safe that there's now footage and evidence. But.
Okay, we're going around in circles now. So are you happy? Are you happy?
I'm happy.
All right, cool.
Anything else? Like maybe in the gym or like in the car or something, or like you're driving alone?
Listen, like you said, if it's hitting like post 9 p.m., I'm on the phone with my boyfriend. Someone's going to be on the phone with me while I'm getting in that car. I think that's always... See, I was going to bring in another case where they did everything right and then they still got killed, because now I'm like... Olorato's case was like that. She had everything right. Location, they knew where she was. She told them where she'd be. But then perpetrators are perpetrators and they will find a way. And I think that's why we have so much pressure on service delivery people, is you need to step up and be better at your jobs, because we can only do so much as people. Like, I cannot walk around with a gun 24/7, unfortunately, you know? Even the taser, they were like, you might not be able to use the taser.
Did you see the woman in America?
Which one?
I don't remember what her name was, but she went on a run, and like she was running in front of cameras. She didn't have any headphones on. Everyone had her location. And this man grabbed her and like made her like run in the bushes, and she fought for her life for I think it was 12 minutes. And so then there was like a run dedicated to her for 12 minutes, like because they tracked it on her Apple Watch how long she.
I think I did.
Yeah, see that how long she lived until like her heart rate stopped.
Oh my gosh,
that is insane.
It's insane. Sorry, but we're going back in circles. Yes, essentially, do everything you can to protect yourself. But we need to push for service delivery to be improved because we can only do so much as civilians. We need systems in place that protect us better.
Real.
Mm. Powerful.
Yeah. Well, to lighten up the mood.
Have you said all you need to say for women to change?
I think we have.
I think just as an individual and as a civilian, I'd like to say thank you so much. Without people like you, you know, we wouldn't feel as comfortable to think, okay, there's a future for this country, first of all, and our children are going to live in a future that is actually going to be sustainable for them. And thank you for seeing us, man. Thank you. You've been all over the world and you see us and we appreciate it. And thank you. I don't know what else to say, but thank you for creating such a powerful movement. And I hope that every movement that you create from here onwards is equally, if not more powerful, but more importantly, does change. I'm not a government hater. I'm not a hater, but I am someone who is going to question things. Doesn't make me a hater. So I really do hope that to all the good policemen out there, thank you so much. Thank you for being the difference in such a difficult space that we find ourselves in. To all the correctional services policemen, all of you guys who are in charge of communities of people in one way or another, please educate yourselves. Take time to educate yourselves on the law if you aren't already, on, you know, what's going on with communities, what's happening, how you can further improve making this world and this country a better place for everyone to live in. Because your grandchildren and their children are not all going to be police women or policemen in the future, and they're going to need whatever culture you are creating right now in this country to live by in the future, because they won't always have you there in this police station to look after them. So let's create a culture of accountability and love within all of our public service systems. And lastly, thank you to everyone who contributed and was a part of the shutdown last week. Thank you to everyone who made their profile pictures purple. Thank you to just everyone who cared, whether you're in South Africa or abroad. We appreciate you so much as women here in South Africa. Thank you, not most of all, but I want to send a special shout out to all the men who were supportive of the movement, whether it was because you were under pressure because people were going to cancel you, whether it's because you actually care, and whether it's because you are a father of someone who has been violated or abused or sexually assaulted, you know, whichever is the right term. We just want to say thank you to all of you for making us feel seen and making sure that the daughters of this country who are going to bear the future generations of this nation are also seen. Thank you so much to everybody. But I think it's time for me to say less. Tando, you got everything you want to say? Anything you want to say?
Like and subscribe, guys. Show us love in the comments. We love you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Cam. We appreciate you so much. And yeah, take care, guys. All the best. Oh, wait. Do you want to play the game?
What is the game?
Okay, hold on. Let me get my bell.
I just was feeling like after such a serious topic, are we going to play games? But
you know what?
We're clearing the energy.
This is the light in the end of the tunnel. You need some positivity when you're doing all this dark stuff.
Really?
You have to find a way to find.
Okay. Let's do the game.
Wait, why isn't it ringing properly? Who's because you're touching the bell?
You're not holding it properly.
There we go. Are we ready?
So what is the game?
There's two different games. So there's Pictionary first.
The movie. Snakes on the Plane.
It's so easy. It's too easy.
Don't say that.
You didn't even get it.
She did. Wait, do
no,
we have to like
first? Yes.
Do we put up our hands? Like, do I just say it?
Just whoever says
okay.
it first.
Okay.
I'm not really like okay. Okay.
Local?
Oh, the Christmas movie, guys. How to Ruin Christmas.
Oh, look at you, see? I had no idea what it was. I knew Christmas something.
Yeah.
Titanic.
I'm not counting points, by the way. I wasn't given my paper today.
Batman.
That was quick.
Okay, now we have... Wait,
I definitely
what did we call
won
it?
If it's not over. I won that. No, I won that.
I wasn't given my paper to get to count points. Okay.
I won that.
Yeah, you don't do it like me.
I come from the Yuzo era.
No one can hear you. Mumzo, your mic, chief.
It's fine. I got Titanic. I got Batman. I got How to Ruin Christmas. And the first, I got three
as well.
We said some at the same time, to be honest. But Batman was me. How to Ruin Christmas was me. And one more. Okay, I'm happy to call it a...
You know, like a draw. Yeah,
I'm happy to call it that.
Hey.
What is that? What is this? Is it still... Because last time... You mixed the letters up. Congratulations.
Oh. It's connotations.
Huh? Tuition, the sonic.
But do all the words go in it?
Is it one word?
Yes. All of that. That's locations?
No. So now location.
Constitution.
There's no P.
Constitutional.
Constitutional.
I'll give you half and half.
Gen Z ate that one up.
I thought you said another word.
Who?
Yo, I'm not even going to say what word I thought you said. I was so stressed. Okay, carry on. Is that
no,
it?
No, because what are you thinking?
Decorations.
No.
Oh, decoration.
Oh, no.
Dictionary, no.
Oh. Ah! That was good. This is not my expertise.
Okay, cool. Candles, no. I love that you made this game a little harder. It was so boring before. Relation, no. Children, no. You could just make the word straight at this
point.
You
know? Like, I'm like, now I'm turning my head sideways, trying to see.
Give me a clue
of
the movie. Kids movie.
Something land.
No.
A kids movie.
Yes.
What happened in the movie?
Cinderella.
Okay.
Oh. That's not a kids movie. That's a fairy tale.
It's a kids movie.
If you said fairy tale, I feel like I would have maybe. I was like, kids movie?
She said it. There's a dress.
That's why I said it.
But it's not a movie. It's
yeah, but
a
if,
fairy
you,
tale.
If you rearrange the letters, it is a movie.
A movie is like Titanic.
No, it's a movie.
It's like Cinderella. Cinderella. Yeah.
It's a fairy tale.
But what is it? On paper, it's a movie. Is it not?
No. It started out as a fairy tale before movies even existed. Are we done? Oh, next one. We're okay. Done. Okay.
Gen Z one.
Oh, one. Ah, you guys.
Gen Z one. Thanks.
Yeah, team
thanks.
Efforts. We
yeah. I don't even care.
She's salty.
But
congratulations.
Hold on. My bell.
Oh, there's a piece there that's holding the bag.
Yes.
Anyway.
Well,
we've said all we need to say. Did you enjoy the games?
I do. I love games.
So, I mean, I don't know if you get the concept of the show. We're trying to bridge the gap between Gen Z and millennials and make sure people... Oh, well, I'm sure they explained all of that to you before you came here.
You did tell me about it.
Do you like it, girl?
I do.
Do you think it's going to be impactful at some point?
I think so. I think intergenerational things are so important. Like, I don't know. We have a lot of intergenerational beef, but I think things like this are great because...
I think beef is so important because at least we know we're communicating.
But it's this... You know, it's healthy beef. It's healthy conflict.
I love it. It's like the Ghana-Nigeria beef. It means we see each other.
About the jollof rice and who's made it better.
Yeah, all of that. I love Gen Zs. I thank you guys. I love everything about you. Like I always say, I love how entitled you are. I love the self-worth. I love how you're telling the millennials off. I love it because I love people who misbehave. So keep misbehaving.
You do?
I do.
Not mom mode.
I didn't say I love children in my house to misbehave. I said I like people
to misbehave. But Gen Zs are children too.
No, I like people who fight the system that is trying to oppress them. I'm not oppressing you. I'm building you. I'm paying your school fees.
I didn't say anything about you. I was just saying
I love people who misbehave.
I didn't say nothing about my mom.
I love people who misbehave. And I say what I said.
You love people who misbehave. Can you please clip that for me? I'm going to use that in future.
Use it. I'll misbehave. Okay, bye guys.